Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, we are in the kind of the dead zone for the Lions. We had some OTAs this week, right?
We have a team
doing a little practicing.
Yeah, rookie minicamp was last weekend, and then OTAs started on Tuesday of this week. First three practices, then next week will be another three practices. Week after that will be mini camp, which is mandatory, and then they'll have their final OTAs the week after that. Typically, though, that those final group of OTA practices are usually just guys that are younger or rehabbing or maybe new additions to the roster this year. Most of the veterans kind of take an early vacation, get their vacation, summer vacation started early. But yeah, we get to see some non-padded voluntary workouts for the next couple of weeks. And even mini camp will be a non-padded mini camp, but we're going to have, we'll see all 90 guys during that portion of the OTA mini camp series.
So there's some video leaking out. And I'm sure there's some streaming opportunity, but you know, the really a dead period for the Lions until training camp starts, except if somebody gets hurt. That's like the only time there's big news that comes out of these, you know, OTAs. Although it's like, well, Jameson Williams is practicing. All right, big deal. We knew he was allowed to practice with the team, but really the only big news that could come out of these is like, yeah, this guy tore an ACL and he's out for the year type of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing with
Campbell
J-Mo,
tore his ACL.
The nice thing with J-Mo is like, it's a voluntary practice. So like a lot of the, you know, people tend to get worked up over these voluntary practices saying, well, why is this guy not there? Does football not mean something to them? And often it's, you know, these guys have things that are scheduled ahead of time before the OTA dates are finalized, or there's a handful of reasons why guys might not be there.
I love when people fly off the handle like that, though. Football's meaningless to them.
Yeah. but Jameson, people were mad about him not being at the workouts that they could do earlier last month.
In fairness to those people, they were more upset about him gambling in the facility, even though they could be gambling in their own living rooms at the same time. But
yeah, we found that out after, though. You know what I mean? Like this is he's there.
True. You're right. Yeah. Yep.
He's there. There's a bunch of other guys there. You'll see videos, and you'll see a lot of new guys there. You saw a lot of the important players, and you know, I'm sure there's some that aren't, but it's just the nature of the beast. A couple weeks when mandatory mini camps here, we'll see them all.
All right. A couple of roster additions since the last time we podcasted. The big one comes from today. They signed German Ifedi, who's an offensive lineman. Used to play for the Bears, right?
Former first round draft pick of the Seahawks, played for the Bears and the Falcons. I think he's got a ton of starts. He started at right guard. He started at right tackle. I may even have some left tackle starts if I'm not mistaken. I know he's got right guard and right tackle starts. Basically a reserve at this point. He'll be 29 over the summer. He was active for all 17 games last year for the Atlanta, but he didn't play more than a handful of snaps, if I recall. And so he's basically just depth, right? He's a depth guy. Now, they had 90 guys on their roster, and they have not officially confirmed him. By the time a lot of people listen to this podcast, that will already have been confirmed, and we'll know who the corresponding move is. But at this point, with us recording, we don't know what that move is just yet. We just know he's been added for tackle depth, or at least, well, offensive line depth, I guess.
Full-time starter the first 5 years of his career, the first four in Seattle. And then the fifth one in Chicago, like you said, relegated. Well, he was a reserve in Atlanta last year, but in Chicago 2 years ago, start seven of the nine games he played. All right. International player assignment has changed. Tight end Patrick Murtaugh, who I was looking forward to. I'm sure Dan Campbell was looking forward to him, and a tight end to mold in his own image, had to withdraw due to medical issues.
Yeah, they didn't really tell us what it was. They just said he was unable to participate. Now, that I don't know if that means, you know, a year from now he'll be back in the mix, or what the situation exactly is. But from what we've been told, he wasn't eligible, and so they found another offensive player to kind of fill that void I don't know if I can pronounce his name right. Max Perscher? Is that how you think you pronounce him?
Max Perscher. Like, where is he from? He's an Italy. International fellow.
He's from Italy. Ooh,
he's Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that throws. I don't know. Percher? We could do straight up, I don't know how to pronounce it, Percher.
So 6'7", 300, mostly offensive tackle. He was a handball player for a long time. And then in 2019, switched over to American football, played in Italy professionally, played in Germany. Then in 2021, he joined the Rams in this program. And then in 2022, he was on their practice squad of the Rams in 2022. So remember, the guys in this program don't count against the roster. So the Rams thought enough of him to, once his time with the program had expired, they thought enough of him to bring him back to their practice squad the following season. So athletic, like from the couple of clips that I saw, it looked pretty athletic. No idea really of where his overall skill set is, but he's been in the NFL for two seasons now. And so that's, you know, that's encouraging, especially if he's only been playing for, you know, 4 years, to have 2 years of NFL experience. That's a good sign.
All right. This is a mailbag episode. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Jimenez has a question about Max Perscher. He wants to know your take on Max Perscher. Is he a project of sorts?
Yeah. I think he's a guy who expectations will be fairly low. He won't count, like I said, won't count against the 90-man roster during the offseason, won't count against the practice squad if they decide to keep him. So unless he's like a diamond in the rough that all of a sudden hits his developmental arc, he's probably a guy that will stick around with the team for a year, and he probably won't cost him anything. If for some reason he shows out, then they can sign him to the roster, and then he can become eligible to play. There's not a ton to know other than the fact that it's a plus that he's been in the league for a couple of years. At the same time, it's not like, he hasn't played in a regular season game either. So that tells me that, you know, that there's still some learning that needs to get done.
All right. So another player added, signed after the rookie minicamp, wide receiver Dylan Drummond, who's a rookie from Eastern Michigan.
Yeah, rookie minicamp had like 13 or 14 guys try out. Drummond was mostly working out of the slot, looked very fairly quick, and he had a pretty consistent day. He earns a spot on the roster, and you know, we'll see where he goes from there. He's not small, but he's not big. He's probably more like a vertical outside guy, in my opinion. But we'll see where he goes. It's a deep group, so he'll have his work cut out for him. But they thought highly enough of him to give him a shot.
Kicker John Parker Romo added to the roster after the rookie minicamp. The former XFL kicker John Parker Romo.
Yeah, played at VaTech, was a UDFA in 2021, signed with the Saints. Then he went to the XFL. Last season with the XFL, he went 17 of 19 on the season. He was 9 of 10 from beyond 40 yards, including hitting a 57-yarder, and was voted the XFL's best kicker. He was at rookie minicamp as well on a tryout basis. The day that we were there to watch the rookies, he literally just stood on the sideline. That was the extent of what he did.
Good addition.
We'll see. I mean, maybe he kicked for him, I would assume heading in, you know, one of the other days or they saw enough that they liked it and the tryout stuff was just a formality, but, he is in camp, and he will be challenging Michael Badgley.
All right, so the question from Marty Hogan, is the new kicker they signed a threat to make the roster?
I think kickers are so finicky that if you don't have a stud, I think the guys are always eligible to be replaced.
Always a threat to make the roster.
Yeah. So, you know, Badgley had a good season. You know, he was like 22 of 24 or 26 or something like that last season. You know, he hit some important kicks down the stretch, but he also had a couple of tough misses. And but he's, you know, he's an experienced leg. And with Parker Romo, you know, he's coming off a good spring where he played well in the XFL. So 57 yards is nice. It's going to be one of those weird like stats, because no one has ever hit a 57 yard field goal in Seattle before. So he owns the longest kick in Seattle stadium. Even though he didn't do it. Yeah. As an NFL player. So it's going to be one of those like trivia things to know.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the Rod Woodshed, where we'll talk about the rules changes. Big one is the emergency quarterback availability. I think the Lions aren't going to be happy with this one.
Well, they actually proposed the rule. Well, right?
They were part of the proposal to it.
Yeah.
They always were two quarterbacks on the 53 man roster.
Right. And so the original proposal that they put out there was that you can have an emergency quarterback available, but the NFL made some stipulations to the Lions proposal. And one of their stipulations was that in order for this emergency quarterback to be eligible, they must be on the 53 man roster. Now, I don't believe that was part of the Lions' initial proposal. I think the Lions initially just said, if we have a guy, no matter where he is on our roster, practice squad or not, if we need a third guy, we can just play him. And the NFL said, no, in order for him to be eligible, he's going to have to be on your 53 man active roster. So it can't be a practice squad guy. It can't be a guy that you elevate like for the game. Even if you elevate him for the game, he would have to still be active. Like, you can't elevate him from the practice squad for the game and then make him inactive and then have him be the third quarterback. They won't accept that. He would have to be eligible, like active for the game. So basic rules are, in order for this third quarterback to be eligible, they have to be one on the 53 man roster. It does not matter if they're active or inactive during game day, but they have to be on the 53-man roster. They can only enter the game if they're deemed inactive. They can only enter the game because of injury. It can't be like, oh, I don't like how our quarterback one is playing, so we're going to bench him. Oh, quarterback two got hurt, so let's go to our quarterback three. That won't be acceptable by the league. It has to be both quarterbacks went down. And the premise for this is what happened in San Fran during the playoffs, right? You have your starter goes down, and then your backup gets concussed, and then Jimmy Garoppolo is sitting on the bench, but they can't use him, even though he was on the active roster. They couldn't use him, and so they had to go back to their quarterback, right, Purdy, and he basically couldn't even throw the ball, right? But they had to go back to him because they didn't have any other options. So the Lions said, boy, wouldn't it be nice if they could have used Garoppolo in that situation. And so that's where the whole thing started from. So, but it's got to be two injuries to the starting two quarterbacks. Now,
which we don't see very often.
Right.
Except for in the NFC Championship game.
Now, if for some reason, like one of the starters that's injured then gets medically cleared, that starter has to go back into the game, and you have to, and then the emergency
Shane
guy
Morris rule
has to be removed,
even though he wasn't cleared to play.
Oh no, yeah, he definitely was not. So yeah, it all centers around injuries. It's interesting to see if a team like the Lions might do this, or if like teams going into playoff runs start adding third quarterbacks for their playoff run, similar to like how baseball adds like pitchers, right, for their postseason run.
Yeah,
it would be interesting to see if they start, if teams start doing something like that, just to have that option, even if they're going to make the that third quarterback inactive. It'd be interesting to see how this rule gets applied in the future here.
All right. Next rule is a 1 year only trial. Fair catch on kickoffs now results in possession at the 25 yard line, not the 20. So like the college rule.
Right. So if you are anywhere on the field, including the end zone, and you call for a fair catch and you catch it, you get possession at the 25 yard line. It doesn't matter where you're at. Now, if you call for a fair catch further down the field than the 25 yard line, you get possession at that point. But if you're 25 yards or less, even in the end zone, and you call for a fair catch, you're going to get the ball at the 25 yard line. So this rule comes with a lot of controversy. There's a lot of
people don't like it.
There's a lot of special teamers, a lot of special teams coaches that really don't like this rule. But the league's counter to that is that their data has shown an increase in concussions, and they attribute that increase to concussions to teams basically pooching kickoffs short and then having that returner run the ball, forcing them to run the kickoff out. And by doing so, they believe, or their data shows, that there was an increased number of concussions in those situations. So this is their way to kind of counteract that. So they're using this rule as a, under the premise of player safety. And that's why they were able to push it through, even though there was so much opposition to it. For me, I think it's just another step closer towards them eliminating the kickoff in general.
Well, that maybe that's right? The fear of the special teams coaches and special team standards.
It very well may be. But in all honesty, they've made so many adaptations to kickoffs in the name of player safety. It's been headed this way for a while, right? Like, they've eliminated the wedge. They've narrowed down the scope of where you can put players. You have to be now closer to the line. A certain amount of players have to be closer to the kickoff line, so that you don't get those running head on big collisions that you used to see a decade ago.
Even though they're still happening, if they're saying the concussion data is going up.
Yep. Right.
And they're making them wear helmets now, things are changing.
So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But I honestly, it wouldn't be surprising in the next half decade if we keep taking more and more steps closer towards the kickoff being just, you get the ball at the 25 and let's start a new series.
All right. Thursday night flex rule. Lions were one of eight teams to vote against having that Thursday night game potentially flexing into the weekend.
Right. Well, so the way that they did this was they've got this rule where you can, basically Amazon was tired of getting crap games at the end of the year, right? And so what they wanted was the ability to swap games with a weekend game and say, we don't want this Thursday game late in the season. And then they can switch it out with a different game that's happening on like a whatever Saturday or Sunday, depending on where you are in the season. But basically from like week 13 to week 17, the league can notify teams. They have to give them like 4 weeks notice, I believe it is. Like it's 28 days or something like that, where they can say to teams, we're going to flex you now to Thursday and bump the Thursday team out. A lot of teams are fine with this. A lot of owners were very fine with this because,
of course,
it's money, right? And Amazon wanted this because it's money, right? But this is a bad thing for fans, right? Like for fans who are buying away games and fans that are like, hey, I want to go to this game in this city in week 15, and they're buying tickets and maybe they want to take their family. And then all of a sudden a month out or a month out of that, before that game, NFL decides to flex it. Well, what's the family, the family's going to get stuck in that situation. You know what I mean? You got to you got to redo plane tickets and hotels, and that's a tough thing. So it's bad for the fans who are planning on attending games. Probably better for a viewing audience. It's definitely better for the moneymakers. But I don't, I'm not a big fan of this rule. Lions weren't either, which is nice to see. Rod Wood specifically pointed to some of those concerns of it not being very fan friendly for the people that want to attend games. And so I didn't like the rule. I was happy to see the Lions were one of the teams that that voted against it, but it passed. And so the league is going to make its money, and this is another way how.
All right, let's start talking about rookie minicamp and OTAs. The first question's from Jay. What rookie needs to make the biggest impact in OTAs? One guy in the higher rounds, one guy in the lower rounds.
So this is it's a tougher question, right? Because there's no contact in OTAs. So it's really going to limit the types of players that can and what they do. Like, for example, running backs aren't going to be properly evaluated as runners because they're not being tackled or really even hit. Like the defenders are basically just putting hands on them. Like it's, two hand touch essentially. So that takes a big chunk away. It also takes a big chunk away of evaluating offensive and defensive linemen because you're not getting full contact. You're just getting like hand movements and lateral ability and stuff like that. So OTAs in minicamp are fun to watch, and there's lots of things that you can ascertain from them, but it's mostly going to be favored towards the skilled players. And so that's why, like at rookie minicamp, Sam Laporta, he looked great because he was winning one-on-ones. He was looking good in his agility in his position drills. And he did well to get open in the team drills as well, which is not terribly hard to do when you're not facing jams or anything like that at the line of scrimmage. And so for a tight end to get free releases all the time, and a guy like him who's quick, it affords him the ability to get open, and he took advantage of that. So who needs to have good OTAs? It's not as clean as like when some of the answers we would get during training camp when the pads are on. But I would say that a guy like Jack Campbell, he needs to have a good camp. One of the things he's going to be asked to do is show some coverage. And so this will be something that's highly featured. He's also going to be a guy that we've talked about before, where he's going to be heavily under the microscope. And so it'd be nice for him to have I think it'd be good for him to get off on the right foot and have a good OTA. As far as like guys in the later rounds, I'd just say anybody who's like fighting for a spot, right? Like
I thought you would say Antoine Green.
For sure. I mean, for sure he needs to, but you could also go into the UDFAs, right? You could say you could say like a guy like Starling Thomas, who was
your new favorite.
He's becoming one of my guys. I thought he was fantastic at rookie minicamp. And for him, it's a tough group it's going to be a tough group to crack, but he showed a lot of really cool skills. He showed a lot of special teams ability. And so I would say for him, the opportunity is there to step up and take over. For a guy like Ibrahim, show that you have agility on the same level as Craig Reynolds and Jermar Jefferson and Greg Bell. If you can do that, you stay in the conversation. So for the later round guys, it's going to be that. It's going to be stick in the conversation, stay in the hunt, and you'll go into camp with a nice resume, and you'll be able to increase your chances making the 53-man roster.
All right, the next question has to do with the quarterback position. It's from Keen Observations. In each of the last two seasons, Goff has a four to five game stretch of bottom tier play. He bounced back both times, but can he afford another stretch like that this year, or is that a deal breaker for an extension?
That's an excellent question, and I don't know if I have a real good answer to it, right? Because if he has some games where he puts up just terrible numbers, but they keep winning, that's going to help him, right? But if he's the catalyst for them losing because he throws pick sixes or something like that,
right?
That could be a problem, right? A 4 or 5 game stretch where he's struggling and then the team struggles with him, that would be bad news. That would be bad news for an extension. But if the team can survive, I think he can survive. And so we'll see how that goes. It is a very important key though, because he has had, that's been an MO of his, is that he has these little stretches of you know, struggles where he stacks games where he doesn't play, you know, super well. And so it'll be important for him to be able to survive that. And if the team and him can survive, that surely will help his chances long-term.
Do you really think so? Because, you know, if Holmes is an excellent mm-hmm. GM, and there's me a lot too. This isn't, well, he's a terrible GM if he doesn't handle mm-hmm. this correctly, but if he sees a path to where these poor golf games, even though they like say he has that bad 5-game stretch, they go 3-2. But if Holmes sees a path to where A, we don't have to give him the extension because we have option B or C, right? You know, B is obviously Hendon Hooker, but C would be something else he sees where, well, we won't have to spend as much money, but we think we're going to get, you know, 95, or maybe we're going to get 105% of what we get with Jared Goff.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what he's going to do? You know, yeah, regardless, or at least he should do. You know, we're sentimental, uh-huh. and we'll be more sentimental if the Lions are good this year, right? If they go 11 sure. and 6, 12 and 5, this fan base is going to be, well, we got to keep the band together. But, yep. You know, good teams, they don't worry about keeping the band together because they know they have to move on. And and if they're good, they're going to be able to find players to replace these guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Like if Holmes sees something, I think he'll move on from Goff.
Yeah.
Unless maybe. Goff's great, then this isn't even a discussion. But
well, I mean, there's so many layers to this that it's going to be such a fascinating story to follow over the next couple of years, because if Goff struggles, but yet you don't see Hendon Hooker play at all, and you don't know what you got in him.
Especially if he doesn't play, everybody's going to be like, oh, right? We got to play him. He's going to be great.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they're in a situation where they could have two quarterbacks that are both successful, or two quarterbacks that are neither successful, and then everything in between, right? So,
right. Oh, yeah. Well, anything's possible. Yeah.
Right. And so I don't think it's like, as much as we want it to say, it's if this happens, then Y is going to be the result, right? Like if mm-hmm. X happens, this is Y. I don't think it's going to be that clean. I think there's going to be so many layers to this onion here that it's going to take some time for us to really dissect. And honestly, we may not know what they're going to do for at least a year, and maybe more.
All right. Moving on to the offensive skill players, Brandon Tiney or Tinney. I don't know how to pronounce that.
I think it's Tinney.
Tinney asks, OTA burning question, who looks / is faster, J-Mo versus Gibbs?
Well, we haven't had access to camp yet, but my guess is that it's going to be J-Mo. And I don't think we're going to see them like line up and run a 40 to, you know, to determine who's the faster guy. But J-Mo is we know what Gibbs is because Gibbs tested, right? We know that Gibbs ran a 4.36 at the combine. That's super fast, right? But like J-Mo is like a different level of speed. When he opens up, he's just at a different level. My guess is that if J-Mo was healthy and had run, he would have ran in the 4.2s. So my guess is that J-Mo will be the guy who is the faster, even if it doesn't quite look that way, because of him running routes, in the open field versus like against, through traffic, it's going to look totally different. Gibbs is probably the quicker, but I think when it comes to like full on open the gate type speed, I got to give that to J-Mo.
Matthew Edward asks, can you do a brief scouting report of what is expected from J-Mo after the ban, as it seems so long since he's been playing healthy and well?
It's pure deep speed. Like his speed is really at a different level. And so we saw last year, they tried different ways to get him involved, end around, quick plays. They tried a bunch of sideline stuff with him. But I really think the way he's going to be best utilized is in a similar way to how they got that touchdown against how he got his touchdown on his first catch against Minnesota. Essentially get him like a free release out of the slot, or have him, get a release outside, and then just basically post, run a post, right? If you can get a single high or even two safeties, and you can split them, I think he can run just right past those guys. That's where he was successful at Alabama. Think like week 18, that bomb that Goff threw to Khalif Raymond, the one that most of us look back and say, man, that was one of Goff's best throws of the season. If J-Mo is running that, that's the ideal route that you're running J-Mo on. You basically just get him one-on-one with like a guy who can't match his speed, which is almost anybody, and just let him work into an open space and just chuck the bomb and kind of let him go. I think that's how he's going to get his initial run. And then you're going to start working him over the middle, and he's going to get some sideline work. I think you're going to have some end arounds and stuff like that, but he's going to get a full off season of training in the spring, a full training camp. He's going to miss some time because of the suspension, but he's also going to get an acclimation period to get back into the mix. And so like, he's really only going to be like out of action and out of rhythm for a couple of weeks. And I think he'll be able to get that back by the time he's ready to step onto the field. And so the arrow's pointing up, but like there's a lot of stuff that he can do, down the field, overarching the middle, stretching the safeties. All of those things are where he made noise as a Alabama prospect, and why the Lions were so aggressive in going up to get him is he can just be this game changer and stretching the field that can really open stuff up for everybody underneath. And, we all know they got a ton of weapons underneath as well.
Jason Krulik asks, over under 4,400 yards passing for the team and over under 2,400 yards rushing for the team in 2023. So to put that in perspective, mm-hmm. 2022, the Lions had 6,614 total yards in 17 games. So this would be an improvement of only 186 yards or 10 yards per game. The passing numbers, 4,400, the Lions ranked sixth in the league, but really eighth because Cincinnati and Buffalo only played 16 games, not 17 games, right, at 4,281 passing. So they, a little boost in passing yardage and rushing yards. The Lions accumulated 2,179, so 2,400 would be a bump, mm-hmm. from last year, would stick them about, eighth in the NFL. The total yards would make them second in the NFL, 6,800. I don't know. Does that help you with your decision making?
I think they're going to go over in passing, because I do think part of the way that they're going to get Gibbs involved is as a receiver, right? And so Montgomery, I think, is going to get in that like 900 yard type range, right? Maybe he even hits 1,000, but I don't think Gibbs is going to be a guy who I think is going to run for 1,000. Like I think the goal will still be to kind of crack that 2,200 mark, but I think 24 is a little bit rich for me. But I think 44, getting to 45 is more realistic, because I think they've got more passing weapons and a creative offensive play caller in order to, let Goff cut it loose there. So, and they got a lot of yak guys, you know what I mean? Like they got a lot of guys that you can just put the ball in their hands and let them run. And I think those come together. And so I'll say over 44, under 24. You want to weigh in on that? You want to guess?
Well, I would do the opposite of you, right? To make but it's not. They're not going to your reasons. But the 2,400 yards rushing, I totally agree with.
Yeah,
you know, Gibbs isn't going to get the ball enough running the ball to get to him and Montgomery pushing 2,400 yards together. And I know they'll get the couple hundred yards here and there out of Craig Reynolds and Muhammad Ibrahim and, mm-hmm. you know, maybe Jermar, you know, or, and whoever they end up signing after all the cuts go on, blah, blah, blah. So I guess I could see under 4,400 yards passing, but I would see under 24, but it would be close. I don't think you're crazy with your statements. Mm-hmm. All right, Hail Mary, how do you see the new running back room coming together? What roles will each play, and who's the odd man out?
Well, I mean, that's going to be a great question, right? Like, who the odd man out is what is the reason we go to camp, right? So I think Montgomery is your bell cow, right? You go to Montgomery on your early downs. He's a guy that can play all three if you need them to be a three down back. After, you know, while Montgomery may be like the starter, you know, Gibbs is still going to have plenty of ways that he's going to be involved as well. You know, the way that the Saints used Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara when Kamara was a rookie, I think is a very easy standard to look to. And so that means Gibbs is going to be, he's going to, you know, probably split his time between catching the ball and running routes and, you know, being the change of pace back. And, you know, he can still be a three down back as it is too, but think of him basically like in the Swift role. Everything that they did with Swift, they're going to do with Gibbs, except maybe a little bit more, even more involvement in the passing game. So 1-2 punch with those two guys. After that, I think it's open, right? It's an open game. And what gets tricky here is that if we look at what they've done historically, they've usually kept four guys. But RB3 has to have a big role on special teams. And then RB4, it's a coin flip on whether or not RB4 is even active, right? So between Craig Reynolds, Jefferson, Bell, and Ibrahim, whoever has the best, I think they're going to be close, like as far as runners. I think Reynolds is probably going to be the front runner initially. I think Ibrahim's probably going to challenge him, you know, a lot. But it's going to come down to who has the bigger role on special teams between them for who ends up being RB3 on game days. If Ibrahim can be like your goal line back and stuff like that, then that's going to help his cause as well. But really, special teams is going to be a big factor here. So if Bell somehow, you know, wins like the kick return job, well, that's going to help him, right? If Jefferson can, you know, regain some of the flash we saw him in his early as a rookie before he got injured, that's going to help him, right? I do think that RB3 job is wide open, and you're really going to have to look at special teams to figure out who might be the lead for that. And so who's out? I don't know. We'll find out.
Jay asks, how many all-purpose yards does Gibbs end up with this season?
I'm going to say 1,500.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Fantasy rosters. Draft them early.
I'm thinking like 700 and like I could see like a 650, you know, rushing, and then like a, you know, 750 as a receiver, and then like something ridiculous, like they put him back on kick returns like a handful of times, he gets 100 yards that way as well. You know what I mean? But like, I think 1,500 is a nice bar. I mean, he could go 800 in the receiving game, and, you know, or 850 and then 650 on the ground. I could absolutely see that happening. I'm going to go 1,500 all purpose yards for Gibbs.
Last season at Alabama, and only 12 games. It's 1,370 yards. Wait, there's probably a little bit more.
They led them 15, in rushing.
70, 16, 38 between rushing, receiving, and kick returns. I don't know. Yeah. Well, but that's meaningless as college. But
he was their leading rusher, leading receiver, and leading kick returner last year at Alabama.
I see. I have under 1,500, and I think it's going to be more like 1,000. I wish this is where we need our whiteboard. And maybe you should just start writing on your garage door right now.
I'll put 1,500 in my notes here, and then I'll put it on my whiteboard in my office.
And I'll go 1,000.
You're going on. Okay, so Joe wants 1,000.
Yeah, I don't. At 1,499, I can't claim victory on 1,499 or, you know, something like that. I mean, I probably could claim victory though on like 1,100 or something.
All right. I got high expectations. It would not surprise me.
No, you should. And if the offensive line is healthy and he's healthy, he should make a big impact this season.
Yeah.
All right. All Lions Go to Heaven asks, lots of talk about Gibbs as a scheme fit, but I haven't heard what it was about his personality they fell in love with to take him at 12. What's he like as a person?
Well, we're still learning that, right? We've only talked to him two times, once over Zoom and then once after rookie minicamp. So we'll get to talk to him again, and there'll be one-on-one interviews scheduled with him down the line, I'm sure. But we're still kind of figuring that out, right? Like, there's a lot of these guys where it's very clear. You can see what is, what about their character, you know, translated to what the Lions, why the Lions would like them. For Gibbs, I think he has, you know, he's got that football first mentality, but I think he's just such a dynamic player that was enough for them to take him at 12. But I don't know if I have like a definitive answer that says like, hey, his personality is like this part of his personality is what separated him. I mean, obviously, they're not going to take him at 7 if they don't think that there's a personality mesh, right? Like, they absolutely had to believe that he's going to mesh perfectly. And I mean, and you can see he's a really respectful kid. Like when they did the meet and greet with Barry Sanders, like you could see his eyes got a little bit bigger. Right. And you could, he was like super respectful of Barry. But like, I don't know if I have like a thing that stands out. Like, with Jack Campbell, you can tell like he eats, breathes football all the time. That's all he wants to do. With Laporta, it's the grind and the dirty work and all, and he, you can tell that about him. Like, there's different things about each of these guys. With Gibbs, I don't know if there's a standout like necessarily character trait. You can tell he loves football, but man, he's just such a dynamic player. As we learn more about him, you know, maybe we'll find out more of that personality stuff.
Oaxaca Lions fan, what UDFAs have a legit shot, or whose roster spots might they be threatening?
I think Ibrahim's chances of knocking off Reynolds are really good. That's going to be a really fun competition. And then I've really planted my flag with Starling Thomas as a potential outside gunner. On special teams, and then a multi-dynamic player in the secondary. With him, though, because of the position flexible guys that they have, like Gardner Johnson, Brian Branch, Will Harris, I don't know if it's like there's necessarily a one for one, right? Because Harris, Branch, Gardner Johnson can all play safety and corner. It's not like Thomas is going to necessarily be up against another corner. He may be up against the safety, right? Because like it might be a numbers game of just like which defensive back, not necessarily a corner versus corner. Might be, you know, it could be corner versus linebacker for all we know, because when you get these multifaceted players, it's not as clean as it is on offense, where it's like, okay, you get X number of running backs and away you go. Thomas there's a handful of guys that he could, that, you know, I think are going to be fighting, that were on the team last year. Guys like my guy, Chase Lucas, maybe Ife Melifonwu, Savion Smith, who, you know, remember, you know, before he got injured, was a rising player for them. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's not as clean with that one, but I think Thomas is the guy to watch. And then the other, I also think they value off the ball linebackers a lot more than fans do. And so that puts guys like Nowoski and D'Arcangelo in play, even if they're not necessarily guys that are high on our radar right now, because if you can do some off the ball things really well, and then you can also contribute on special teams, there's a chance for you to find a spot in the NFL.
Offensive line questions. Billy Joel. I don't think it's the same one.
Yeah, maybe.
Yes. Well, he could be a huge Lions fan. What's your initial sense on who wins that starting right guard job for the year? Do you think Colby Sorsdahl has a chance to beat out veterans Vaitai in Glasgow?
I think it's Vaitai's job to lose. I think if Vaitai were to go down, or if he were going to get beat, it would be because of Glasgow, right? Sorsdahl, I think, is there's enough talent there that he's worth paying attention to. But to expect a guy from William and Mary to make a position switch from right tackle to right guard and then beat out two guys that were starting in the NFL, you know, that's a big ask. So my expectations on Sorsdahl is that he's not starting this year. He will be developing and he will be a reserve. And like, as you always like to point out, he'll play because someone will get hurt. Mm-hmm. But I expect the pecking order to be Vaitai and Glasgow, and then probably Sorsdahl will probably be the next kind of interior offensive lineman in the pecking order. So, yeah, I think it's Vaitai's job to lose right now.
Anthony, between the numbers, asks, from left to right, Decker, Jackson, Ragnow, Glasgow, Vaitai. He did it with their numbers in his in the actual question.
Yep.
But you've replaced it with names. With Sewell reporting as eligible, is this the new normal six offensive line set? And how excited are you to see what Ben Johnson draws up?
So the trick is here, and it's a thing that I think gets overlooked with the sixth offensive lineman, is that you are not allowed to switch offensive linemen out of to make them eligible and then ineligible on the next play.
Ridiculous rule.
Without substituting them or without like having them take a play off. So for example, remember when Sewell caught that pass?
Yep.
He was a tight end the two plays prior to that, because he had to be. If he couldn't go from right tackle to tight end mid-series, that's against the rules because it's a disadvantage to the defense because they can't track the guys. So if they're in a situation where they just need a sixth offensive lineman for like a play, they're just going to take their sixth, they're going to take their top reserve offensive lineman and put that offensive lineman out at tight end, which would probably be Graham Glasgow. If, though, they have a plan and they are willing to run a sixth offensive lineman series, then absolutely that would make sense to put Panay as that sixth offensive lineman and put him in motion. Like if they get a short field and they just want to run it down people's throats, absolutely put Panay out there at tight end and just run it. And then you can leak him out and throw the ball to him. And that'd be awesome. And everybody will go nuts over it. But the fact of the matter is he can't switch between right tackle and tight end and then back to right tackle without taking a play off. So he'd have to go like right tackle, substitute out, come back in as a tight end, substitute out, then come back in at right tackle. So, and they're not going to want to do that with Sewell. They're going to want him on there for every play. So if they do go into that formation, I expect it to be in a specific situation where they want those six guys and they just happen to make Sewell their tight end option.
All right. Flipping over to the defensive side of the ball. Vandenberg has lots of injury updates in the news as OTAs are set to open this week. Is Onsarike healing in the mix or a washout?
Well, there's not been anything official. Every time, you know, Holmes or Campbell is asked about him, they always say the same standard. He's progressing and essentially they're hopeful, right? Yeah. Behind the scenes, though, I have heard some whispers that he is headed in the right direction and that they are hopeful that he can, you know, make a run at it. Now, this is also a I'll have to see it in action type of right. thing in order to believe it, you know, but if he's going to make a run at it, and he might be out there for OTAs, I remember non-contact, or, you know, it's, you know, voluntary stuff. Like maybe he's out there, maybe he's not. If he's not, that's nothing. Don't read into that too much either. But the kind of whispers I'm hearing, are that they are optimistic that he can make another run at it. So we'll see. We'll see if that happens and if the whispers are, you know, turned into some, you know, some factual evidence here. But for now, that's unfortunately all we know.
Peter Meyer and Jamara asked similar questions. Do you think the Lions are done adding to the interior defensive line, a veteran perhaps, after the Covington signing? Feels like they are banking on the potential of Levi, Benito, and Bugs, whilst not overspending on the position. With this group, do you think we can avoid another Panthers game like last year?
Well, remember, Martin is the guy that they believe can be the difference maker, and they're putting a lot on Martin's plate. They're hoping Bugs can also find some of the problems that he didn't, you know, some of Bugs showed some really good development down the stretch outside of that Carolina game when everybody was bad. They also invested a first round pick into a linebacker to try and help, you know, work again in their run defense. Right. So they added two top 100 picks. They re-signed the guys that they had last year. And then they added like Covington. I think this was their plan and this is what they're comfortable doing. I don't know if they're going to make a move, if it will come before training camp, like with Bugs last year. Remember, they went into training camp thinking they were good. And then all of a sudden they were like, holy cow, our offensive line is absolutely smashing this interior. And so then they went out and they added Isaiah Bugs, and then they grabbed Benito Jones off the waiver wire, and because they needed to. I think they feel much better with this group that they have now, and they've added, you know, they beefed up the linebackers, they beefed up their with Martin, they added a big body that they can put in the middle of there as well. And so I think they're going in hoping that this is enough, and we'll see, and then they're going to let it roll and they're going to see, and if they need to make a change, it'll be something that they make in August probably.
Bada bing, bada boom. Ask, do you see any more substantial additions still this offseason?
Again, not right now. Right now, it's a explore what you have and figure it out. If you get an injury, you're going to get a guy like Ifedi. That's the level of guy you're probably investing in. You're not going to tie a lot of money into signing bonuses and stuff like that. Also, the impactful players that are out there, they don't want to be in spring camp right now, right? Like, they're not coming out. So I think – and Dominican Sue was on NFL Network last week. This week, I think it's Gerald McCoy. They're on, like, all week. And Sue basically came out and said, I have no interest in being in training camp at all. I'll just show up and – I'll be ready.
Well, yeah, in fairness to Sue, he's right. Yeah. He's like 36 years old. He'll be ready. He doesn't need training camp, you know. Right. I know a lot, we all have our certain feelings about Sue, but, you know, I do agree with that statement.
And I think that's a statement that transcends to other veterans as well. There's a lot of guys that are going to go in and say, any difference makers that are still out there, they're going to they're probably going to be just out waiting there until the end of August. Yeah, just waiting until they you know, don't have to go through the rigors of training camp.
All right. Linebacker group. Larry M's question. Do you see them using more three linebacker sets now that they have the personnel to possibly do so?
My short answer to that is no. I don't expect more three linebacker sets for a couple of reasons. One, Calvin Shepard came out and said that they run two linebacker sets and that's their plan and that's what they're going to do moving forward. When he was talking about Jack Campbell on day one, he was like, yeah, we're a two off the ball linebacker team. Like, that's what they run. They run two linebackers off the ball. Now, if they do go to three linebacker sets, I expect that third linebacker to be James Houston or Julian Aquara, and it will be primarily an edge rusher. Like, you might see like a Hutchinson, Bugs, McNeil, Kaminsky, Houston situation out there where you have five guys all across the front. Saw that against the Bears last year. So running teams, you might see that five-player front, and then you would still have two off-the-ball linebackers. And technically that set would be a three linebacker set, but that's not what I think Larry's talking about.
Yeah, not the Larry's essence talking of Larry's about, question.
Right. The essence is, are you going to run a true Sam, true, you know, Will in a Mike? And then the answer for me is no, they're going to run what they run, which is your Mike and Will, they call it a buck. The Mike, Will, are going to be your off the ball guys. And then you're going to have your hybrid Sam, who's your pass rusher and almost primarily a pass rusher against teams that want to run heavy. And then of course you're going to get situational looks where you get Houston out there as well. But I don't expect three off the ball linebacker sets to be a thing in Detroit.
Marcus McGee, what are the expectations of Jack Campbell in coverage? Well, there's a lot of expectations.
Yes. I keep saying this, but like, it's almost going to be unfair, in my opinion, what is going to be expected of him. There's going to be a learning curve with the linebacker position. There's a learning curve with a lot of, you know, positions as rookies. There's a handful of positions as rookies where you can step in and be dynamic and just go, right? Linebacker is not one of them. So there's going to be a learning curve. He's going to be put in situations where he has to run with guys in man. He's going to look much better in zone because, again, he's experienced there. But if you put him out one-on-one against like Gibbs in the flat or even Laporta in the flat, it's going to be hard for him. It's going to be hard for any rookie. But I think if you're expecting him to come out and be like this guy that can hang with like tight ends and slot defenders, I don't think that's realistic. That's why you have guys like Gardner Johnson and Brian Branch. Like, those are guys that can hang with your tight ends, and you can use those guys as like hybrid linebackers, cover linebackers. With Jack, I think they're really going to focus on him being a downhill run stuffer and a zone coverage guy and with a little bit of man mixed in, but expectations for him being like this dynamic coverage guy out the gate, I think, are unrealistic.
Defensive backs question. It's almost like you started to lead us into this one. Jason Krulik asks, how can Aaron Glenn scheme to get both CJ Gardner Johnson and Brian Branch on the field together? Branch seems to be too smart, too competitive, and too good to keep on the bench.
Yeah. Branch has even come out and said his goal is to learn as many spots as he can, because that's how he's going to get on the field. There's going to be situations where you're going to use Gardner Johnson in a lot of coverage opportunities. You're going to use him. You're going to drop him into safety at some point. You're going to use him mainly out of the slot, but there's a lot of, you're going to keep Gardner Johnson in coverage a ton. With Branch, it's a little different, because you can use Branch as a cover guy, but you can also use him as like a linebacker. You can blitz him off the edge. You can blitz him in the A gap. And so I expect Branch to get used equally, but also in different sets. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see like a Sutton and then Mosley or Jacobs, whoever's on the other side, and then Gardner Johnson and Branch all out on the field at the same time, like all four of those guys. even if Kirby and Tracy are still back there, and then you just you reduce down to one off the ball linebacker, because Branch can be that kind of hybrid guy. So I expect Branch to get used a lot. And while he does have a lot of overlap to Gardner Johnson, I also think there's other things he can do in the box that Gardner Johnson doesn't, while Gardner Johnson does more things on the back half that maybe Branch isn't necessarily isn't going to be great at right off the bat, because he's, you know, until he gets more experience.
Victor Randazzo asks, can you talk about the iffy discourse a bit? I feel like people have just given up on him sort of unfairly, and I'm not sure why. He seemed like he was doing okay at corners rookie year until getting injured, then switched positions last year. Yeah, he wasn't great, but.
It's the injury. That's really why people have soured on him, is because he was injured as a rookie. Then he position switched, and then he got injured again. And then he was late to the dance. And then he came out his first game, and he was a starter against Carolina in the game where they just got massacred. And then he actually started the next week against Chicago and played much better. But then that was it. Then he didn't really play much after that. The injuries, though, have been the biggest hiccup, right? Like, you really, it's kind of been a out of sight, out of mind type of thing. He made a couple of good special teams plays down the stretch as well that I think get overlooked, but he is super athletic. If he can stay healthy, he'll have a full season of training camp under his belt, which he didn't get last year. So last year he was playing catch up to the position switch a lot. So if he can get more experience, get more training camp, and get that position down, I think he'll have a real good shot to stick at that third deep safety. But again, he kind of fits the mold of like a Will Harris or a Gardner Johnson or a Branch, where he can play kind of both. My guess, though, is that they're really going to lean on him to learn safety. And when he gets that safety, then they'll start, you know, when he gets that safety spot down, then they'll start expanding him out a little bit more. But, you know, his off the ball coverage is what got him drafted in the third round. And you can see flashes of it. And he definitely has the athletic talent, but he's got to get safety down first. And so if he can get that down, he's got a good shot. But pass to starting roles, I don't think they're available to him anymore unless an injury occurs. But I do think it is very early to start writing this guy off, because if he wasn't injured, I think we'd have a very different perspective on him.
All right, let's move into the general questions. The first one's from Marty Hogan. What is the biggest hole left on the roster?
You know what? I don't know, because
defensive tackle, interior defensive line.
But like,
you do know. Be honest.
Well, I mean, that's what we're going to figure out, right? Like, that's on paper. That's where it seems like the biggest weakness is.
Right, defense.
Right. No, I agree with
rookie linebacker. He'll be picking the wrong holes the wrong gaps to defend.
Very possible. Martin might get pushed off his spot if he doesn't have the right leverage, right? Like, if Martin can be what they think he can be, it might not be as big of a weakness as we think. At the same time, on paper, it definitely looks like the weakness. But like we said earlier, I don't think there's necessarily an answer out there that's going to solve these problems. Like, it's not like we'll learn a lot in OTAs. We'll learn even more in training camp. But on paper, I think the interior defensive line is still the biggest question mark.
All right. Night Moves. I forced you into that one. Night Moves asks, why is there talk of the Lions only having a middle of the road defense as a best case? A secondary of CJ, Gardner Johnson, Mosley, Sutton, Joseph, and Walker is probably in the top 6 to 7 secondaries, and in a year 2 defensive line improvement from Aiden, Houston, and Pascal. Why are we not having a top 10 hype?
Well, because statistically they were the worst defense in the league, even though Right. And then even though they were, if you look at like DVOA and you look at their recency numbers in DVOA, they were still in that like top 17, 18, 19 range. And so to expect a team to make a significant jump from being in the, even at their best in the teens, to being to jump up into the top 10 is a big ask, because there's a lot of middling teams that are in, you know, in that gap between 10 and 20. And yes, you can make a quick rise, but there's also a bunch of other teams that added to their talent as well. And they could be on the move up, but like, there's a lot of unproven players. They have the potential. It absolutely looks like they have the potential, but it would be a massive jump statistically. It would be a massive jump from a DVOA standpoint to be in that top 10. And while they did add a ton of talent in the secondary, there are still question marks, like we just talked about, in the middle of that defensive line. We don't know if Jack Campbell's going to be ready to go. We don't know if Martin's going to be ready to go. Right. And like, so you're still putting a lot on rookies, and there's question marks there. And so to think that they're going to make that big of a jump, I think is a bet that I think people are not quite ready to make, because we need to see it. We need to see them show that they have that potential before people are, I think, are going to buy in. Right now, it's just, it looks good. They've made good improvements, but have they made enough to make that big of a jump? I don't know if anybody's willing to bet on that right now.
Treff asks, do you expect anyone on the defense to be in the top 10 to 15 in their positions by the end of the season besides CJ, GJ?
Well, I mean, look, that's a tough question, because when you look across the league, if you're talking about 10 or 15, you're talking about they would be like
top half,
right? Top half of the league. Right. And for some positions you have, you know, like for defensive tackle, right? You're talking about top quarter, because there's two defensive tackles, and to be in the top 15 defensive tackles, you're in the top 25%, right? So like Aleem McNeil, I think if you look at like nose tackles, he's absolutely going to be in the top 10 of nose tackles, but he's not really playing nose. He's playing like more of a three now. So if you look at the threes, is he going to be in the top 15 threes? Maybe. But if you're talking about top 15 defensive tackles in general, probably not, right? So it's a tricky thing when you start, you know, trying to rank these guys positionally, because of it doesn't, you know, the positions don't always match. And how do you classify what an edge rusher is? Do you count linebackers or just guys that put their hand in there? I don't know. So it gets a little tricky. What I will say is that I think Gardner Johnson to be in Pro Bowl conversations, right? I think Aleem McNeil could find himself in those conversations as well, especially if he starts reaching some of the potential that we saw from him late in the year. Like that Giants game and like what he did against the Packers late, I thought were like really, really good games for him. Could you see a guy like Jack Campbell make a Pro Bowl? I don't know. I think that'd be hard. But could Jack Campbell be a top 15 linebacker? Maybe, if they think he is what he is. But I mean, that's a big ask. That'd be a big ask. So
you're not saying Hutchinson, this is the year two. I mean, there's going to be a little sophomore slumpage, but his work ethic and all that, is it that much to ask that he's not a top 15 defensive end, which would actually, you'd start pushing you towards superstar territory, right? This is right. One of the marquee positions on a football team.
Well, I mean, when you look at his numbers last year, he was putting up numbers that were like rare air. Like he was getting close to like stuff that was like awfully good. Like when you start, and again, the thing about Hutchinson is he's not like going to be this exceptional, like 12, 15 sack guy, but he's also
to 9.5 last year. Right.
But it's going with Hutchinson, it's going to be a collection. It's going to be, oh, look, he's in the top 10 or top 15 in sacks. Oh, but he's also in the top 15 in tackles for loss. Oh, he's also in the top 15 in like run defense, right? Like,
well, if that's all true, then he's one of the top 15 defensive ends in the NFL.
Right, I agree with that. But when we look at guys, though, we often, especially edge rushers, we often fall in love with the flash.
Sacks.
Right?
The sacks.
Pressures, sacks. Like, and if you can do those things, those are the guys that are going to get the hype, and those are the guys that are going to get the love. Yet, the player that coaches love as on the edge are the guys that can set it, are the guys that can be the run defenders, are the guys that are making the unselfish play so that other teammates are getting sacks. Those are the things that Hutchinson does. I don't think Hutchinson is ever going to be the flash player that's going to get like this top 10 level recognition. But I think as a collective player, he's always going to be a player that like teams covet and coaches covet, because he'll be able to do, instead of being elite in one area, he's going to be well above average in like 10 areas. You know what I mean? And for people who appreciate that part of the edge rusher, he'll be in the top 15. But I don't know if he's going to be in like the average ESPN analyst that's like, oh, you know, let's rank our guys, or, you know, Bleach Report guys that are like, let's do top 15 edge rushers. Like, he probably never make those lists because he's not going to be the flash guy that gets 50 pressures a year, or, you know, actually probably will, but, you know, but gets these like absurd numbers from a pass rushing perspective, because his game is so balanced in other areas as well.
All right, Rob JT, a Detroit Lions fan, asked similar questions. I know we're all drinking the Kool-Aid, but do you think expectations are too high? And what worries you guys the most for the upcoming season? New secondary, new running backs, wide receiver core, Goff regressing?
For me, I'm not worried about the secondary for a couple of reasons. You have veteran guys that are coming in, and that's going to help. Sutton is well known for his ability to adapt and his ability to be intelligent. Garner Johnson is familiar with the scheme. Jacobs is familiar with the scheme. So is Tracy, Kirby. Branch is one of the smartest guys in the room. Like, you've got all these guys that are either familiar with the scheme or highly intelligent and like known for their ability to be intelligent. So I'm not really worried about secondary much at all. I expect by the end of training camp them to be fluid. Running back, I think that's a position that you can turn it over and be ready to go. I think receivers, it's going to be a little tricky at the beginning, but again, I think they have enough depth at receiver that I'm not worried about it. So do I think they're overhyped? No. But
they're underhyped?
No, I don't think they're underhyped, but I think they're I don't think they're overhyped. My concerns are a Goff regression and injuries. Injuries are always the key catalyst in what derails these
Lions type of potential. Lions were extremely lucky last year when it came to injuries.
Well, they had their fair share of tough ones, right?
Yeah, but every team has injuries, but right. Their offensive line remained healthy. Goff remained healthy.
Well, they lost Vitae before the first.
Yeah, well, snap. Okay. No, I'm sorry. But what once they Pro Bowlers did shoehorn Evan yes. Brown in there. And yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And he was okay. And yeah, he did even get hurt, right? But I don't know, for an NFL offensive line, only losing one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. The other, having your four Pro Bowlers all do well, it was pretty nice. But yes, injuries are my biggest concern. A Goff regression is always going to linger. At the same time, I feel like Ben Johnson is such a wizard that he understands how to put Goff in the right situations in order to be successful. So, I think that's those are the main two. Like, I'm not as worried. I'm worried about run defense. I'm worried about and injuries and you know, if Goff has a setback, that's it. Those are like the big things that I'm concerned about.
Yeah. Injuries is the big one. And the Goff regression, the Lions turned the ball over the least in the NFL last season.
Yep.
Only turned over the ball 15 times. They ended up being a +7 turnover margin, you know, which wasn't at the top of the, but it was near the top of the league. Like, you know, that could easily flip, you know, and that, sure. and that'll be led by Goff probably throwing more interceptions, right. But they could be just unlucky with fumbles, you know, that sort sure. of thing too. So, or they just don't make big plays on defense and aren't forcing to turnovers. You know, we'll see. There's plenty of things that can make this go bad, but
there's
you
know, hopefully
they don't hit all of them.
There's a lot of statistics that are you can replicate from year to year. Turnovers is not one of them. Turnovers mm-hmm. is a mystery every year, as is injuries. And so those are always the things that are going to stand out and, you know, be something to be, you know, concerned of.
Lions fan 860 asked if we are anticipating starting three rookies, Gibbs, Laporta, and Campbell, and with four tough games to start the season, should we be expecting a slower start than we expect, and can the fan base handle it? No, fan base cannot handle it.
Yeah, fan base will not be able to handle it. But I'm not overly worried about the offensive players, because offensive skill players tend to translate to offensive success pretty quickly. I think Gibbs is going to be a co-starter, he's not going to be asked to carry the load.
And they're going to be using him advantageously.
Correct.
Too. Like a lot of his work will be designed earlier in the season.
Yep. And I think the same thing is load. Yep, exactly. Same thing is also going to be true of Laporta. I think he's going to be put in situations where he can succeed. Campbell is the one that's going to, they're going to throw him to the
deep end.
And that's it. Yep. And so that's why he's going to get criticized so much. And so, if Campbell struggles, you expect to have other defensive struggles as well. But I don't think Campbell is going to make or break like a game necessarily, right? Like, I don't think it's whether Campbell is out there or like Malcolm is out there, that's going to be the difference between a win and a loss. I guess my bottom line is, I'm not as worried about the rookies causing problems. I think the potential tougher slate of games than maybe we're anticipating could be a problem. But again, if they lose more than they should right off the bat, will the fan base be able to handle it? No, absolutely not. I'm with you. They will hit the panic button faster than anybody you've ever seen before.
You can't blame them.
No, not at all. Because the hype is not
what we've lived through.
Yeah, and the hype is not just locally. It's nationally. Nationally, they're getting a ton of hype, right? And so, yes, I do. If they do lose early, I expect panic. I don't expect it to be because of the rookies, though.
Dan Pask asks, well, first he says, thanks, Eric and Joe. How would you grade the NFC North off seasons to each other? Who do you think is our stiffest competition in the black and blue division? Cheers.
I think the Packers are the most complete team, and I thought they had a good offseason or a good draft anyway.
Yeah.
They added a lot of draft. I thought they did well. I thought the Bears added a bunch of nice talent, but my goodness, they had to. They were devoid of talent before, and they had more capital to spend than anybody. So if they didn't come away with a lot of good talent, that would have been a major disaster for them. So I think both the Bears and the Packers improved their rosters. The Packers, though, have a massive question mark at quarterback. And I think some unproven things going on there as well. And they lost some of their mojo. The Bears are still the Bears. They're still a mess, and they've improved quite a bit, but they're still a mess. They still need another offseason before they're going to be, you know, ready to contend for anything. And I think the Vikings got worse. And so I'm not as impressed with the Vikings. Now, the Vikings were the best team last year.
13-4 last year.
But I'm expecting some regression. So I could understand the argument of saying the Vikings could be the biggest competition, but I don't think it's them. Right. I think they're going to regress enough that I'm not going to be as scared of them, even though they have arguably one of the top wide receivers in the game.
And a tough wide receiver core. You know, they improved their wide receiver core on top of it. Well, Cousins can still play quarterback.
Yeah, they lost Thielen, but then they added Addison, right? So they can still play offense. That's for certain. But their defense is a mess. Go ahead.
The thing about the Packers, you know, like the Packers, they had a lot of stuff, you know, like they had a big weight hanging over them last season with Rodgers, you know, everything going on with Rodgers in that universe.
Yeah.
One thing the Packers have going for them going into this season is that's all gone.
No distraction.
There's no baggage to them anymore.
Right.
And it is all going to be contingent on, is Jordan Love ready to be an NFL starting quarterback? And if he is, they're going to be just fine. Because they don't have all that other stuff to deal with anymore. It's all gone, you know. Yeah. So they're like freshly reborn again. So we'll see. They might be the stiffest competition because I think the Vikings in a way kind of now have all that baggage to them. You know, with Cousins, like, do they keep Cousins? You know, Cousins, you know, he probably doesn't like hearing all this stuff either. You know, all this peripheral stuff of, you know, do we really want this guy around type of stuff. And that probably gets to him a bit. And so, you know, that probably hurts them. And then the Bears, they had a good offseason, but, you know, hopefully they're still a year or two behind.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the Packers are the toughest competition. At the same time, when they lost that distraction, I think they also lost some of their mojo. And so.
But they could start fresh. They're being reborn here.
Okay.
I hate the Packers, but this is what they do.
Right. In my mind, when I look at them, I look at them as a collection of pieces that aren't necessarily unified. And I feel like Rodgers had that ability to unify even a team that was missing holes. And I don't see that with them anymore. And so I think they're going to have to work for it. I don't think they're just going to show up and the mojo is going to be there and they're going to be in competition. But at the same time, I still think they're the most probably complete team, even if Jordan Love struggles, I still think they're a complete team. They have more talent, I guess, than any of the other NFC North teams.
Oh, really? I mean, the Vikings have a lot of talent, at least offensively.
Yeah. But I think the Packers just have they just have more of them. I just feel like they have good layers. They have good youth. They have good veterans. They have good players at different levels of the defense. They have good players at different levels. Right. Like I just think collectively they're a better team. I just think they lost some of their mojo. They're young at certain spots, and they're going to have to there's going to be a learning curve for them. There's going to be hiccups. There's going to be obstacles. The talent is there to make them, potentially problematic anytime you face them. At the same time, I don't think they're like ready to make a run necessarily the way that I think like the Lions are. And I think the Vikings are headed the wrong direction. I think it's a prime time for the Lions to be going all in on this and trying to make a run at being the North champions.
Michael Luckies. They should give us pronunciation. No, they shouldn't. No, this is more fun. Me massacring names. Michael asks, let's play devil's advocate. What realistic scenarios would cause the Lions to miss the playoffs in your opinion?
Oh, massive injuries, Goff. Yeah. Like what if Jared Goff gets hurt? Like is
Badgley missing game winning field goal after game or game tying field goal after game tying field goal.
Yeah. I mean, those are all, I mean, we could devil's advocate the whole season, right?
We could get them down to 2-15 with devil's advocating.
But yeah, I mean, look, injury, if we're talking realistic, it's
slow start.
If you have key injuries, slow start, key injuries at wrong spots, right? Like there's certain spots where if you have an injury, like the Goff, if Goff gets injured, this team is screwed. In a bad way. Yep. Yeah. I mean, no matter what. And you can say that about almost any NFL team, not all of them, but almost.
San Francisco.
But they'd be in a bad way. All right. Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, people be praying Hendon Hooker gets up to speed early if Goff were
right? He's not going to be ready right away.
Right. That's the thing. They're in this kind of limbo, at the quarterback spot. So yeah, I think, but if you're talking about taking injuries away, a slow start would be problematic. That could, you could see, you could end up in a scenario similar to last season where if you dig yourself in a hole, it's hard to get out of that hole. You have a tougher schedule down the stretch too. Like you have a couple tough games and then a bunch of easier ones that you should, that in theory you should win, and then tougher games down the stretch. So if you do fall into a hole early, you even if you get some of those middle games, it might be hard to close the season with, you know, having to win like five games in a row or something like that.
We do this every year. Schedule, like, it'll be harder or easier.
Totally different.
Because it'll be totally, because some teams will be better and we don't even know it. That'll be part of it. Like, it's slow start, plus then in the middle of the season, there's a couple of games where Campbell botches, like, a lot of situations, and they lose, like, two or three that they shouldn't in the middle six or seven games. And then now you're in a scenario where they're fighting for their playoff lives.
Yeah, I mean, those are all realistic problems that every NFL franchise that is on the cusp of really turning a corner, these are all problems that all those franchises are facing, right? Like, there's only four or five teams in the league that can overcome situations like that, right? So, yeah, I don't think the Lions are any different. I don't think there's anything like that says we're expecting that to happen either.
Right. Well, we're just playing devil's advocate.
Yep.
Zach Alm asked, this is a question for both of you to try to answer. If the Lions beat the Chiefs in week one, which would be higher, Joe's belief in the curse or Eric's unfiltered optimism for the team? Really appreciate all the content you guys put out there. Thanks.
Well, what would be higher?
It would be my belief in the curse.
Oh, you think so?
Well, when you're proven right, you don't get more swelled head about it. You know, you usually try to keep it pretty, pretty calm. Like if the Lions win, you're going to be like, oh, you know, I figured this was going to happen. I picked them to win anyways, you know, whereas me, it's like, oh man, like this is going to come back to, this win is going to come back to bite them in some way, you know? So I would take it for me.
Man, if they beat the toughest team on their schedule and the defending champs right off the bat, my optimism will reach a boundary it probably has never been at before.
I don't know. You're probably already there right now. Though.
That's true. I'm getting there. I still think there's a little bit holding me back. But look, when that week 18, it's still lingering. And the NFL isn't doing me any favors by playing that game once a week and either. Right? Like they just played that game last night.
No, I saw it.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing. Sat at my desk and worked and watched that game for 3 hours. And I'll do it next week when they put it on again. So,
all right. I'm changing my answer now. Now it's Eric's unfiltered optimism for the team. It's going to be higher.
Well, maybe. I do feel like it would be pretty high if they beat the Chiefs in week one. Because I don't think either of us are expecting that to happen right now.
No, not right now. Yeah, I mean, if Mahomes gets hurt before week one, and then say, well, the Lions have a pretty good shot at winning, you know, even though they'll be on the road, blah, 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 we'll get there. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Want to see another great Mahomes season.
Yep.
Maddie Lane, is this the most optimistic you've ever been about the Lions prospects heading into a season? And is there a small part of you thinking they'll let you down once again? Could you discuss your top three seasons where you had the highest expectations for a successful year?
I think we can tie this into Jay's question, which is next, which is this the best roster the Lions have had in the 2000s, meaning better than 2011 and better than 2014. I think this is the best roster we have seen since then. There were definitely like positions like with Calvin and Stafford and like Sue and Fairley, like where you felt like more confident, even with Glover Quinn, right back there, like you felt really confident at certain spots, but they also had like big weaknesses in on each of those rosters as well that you didn't quite feel as confident. I feel like this team here is more balanced and it's younger with more potential and more upside. And that's why I think this roster is better than what we've seen, even though like 14 had like three superstars on it.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. 2011 was seen as a team on the rise.
Yeah.
Remember, they kind of hung in there against New Orleans and kind of botched things going into the half and then in the second half. And that was, it's like, okay, the Lions, this might be a pretty good Lions team. But everybody was questioning it. It wasn't like how it is now where it's like, well, are the Lions going to take the next step, the upper echelon? 2014 was like a really veteran-laden team, which we didn't know, but we all kind of had a feeling like Sue's gone, man. He's done. Like he's not, right. he's not going to be a Lion. And as soon as the season over, that's the last game we're ever going to see Sue play. So there was kind of always like an axe hanging over that team in a way.
Sure.
It's like, well, this is kind of it for them. And maybe they'll hang around, but they didn't have the optimism that you would have gone leaving 2011 doesn't have the same feeling leaving 2014 and coming into this season. This has got to be the best of this century.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look.
Well, all right. Wait. There's a caveat that this is easy for us to say. The Millen season one, because the Lions were 9-7, right? And they lose to Chicago, the Paul Ettinger kick, right? The former Spartan defeats the Lions to hold them out of the playoffs, right? If I'm remembering my Lions history correctly. Then they fire Russ Thomas. Everybody's, oh, they finally got rid of Russ Thomas. They finally got rid of that regime. And they're installing Matt Millen, who's got an unbridled amount of football knowledge and enthusiasm. And here's a football guy, you know, like just like Rod Marinelli. Like here's a caricature of what football is. And now he's taking over. And there was a lot of and then Marty Mornhinweg, this offensive genius they're bringing in to run the team. There was a lot of optimism at the beginning of that era. Don't forget. And remember when they brought in Mariucci with Harrington and Rodgers. There was some, but I don't know. This still beats all of that. But we can't discount all of that. During that putrid era of Lions football, there was still optimism at that time. But I would say that going into the season, this century, this is as good as it gets.
Yeah, and again, I think it's the balance, right? I think it's, you've got, see, like that 14 team had Calvin, Stafford, Sue, Slay, and Glover, right? Like, it had five guys that were really good. And geez, was Quandre on that team too? Is there nickel? Like, I'm trying to recall. I don't, off the top of my head.
Been real young, yeah. But
yeah, he would have been like a rookie that year or something. If I don't, maybe I'm wrong.
No, he wasn't on the team that year. Looking at
no, I was wrong. Roster. Okay. But they had like superstars, but the collective whole, like, who were their starting linebackers? Wasn't it like Tulloch? Was it Tulloch? No.
No, that was Stephen Tulloch. That was Tahir Whitehead.
Whitehead, there you go.
I'm looking at Josh Bynes. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't a very strong linebacker.
But that's my point.
Tulloch played three games.
There you go.
Ashley Ballmer.
Like,
not the greatest defense, although they probably had pretty decent defensive stats, basically, because that was the peak of Sue's career.
Yeah.
Levy. That's DeAndre Levy. Isn't that his last year?
I was trying to remember if that was his last year, if it was the year before. Okay. Regardless.
No, he had two more years, but injury, that was his last healthy year.
Healthy year. There you go. It was a good defense, right? And so, but the offense,
they were the number two defense in the NFL, weren't they?
At one point, like weren't they at one point, right? I just, there were holes though, right? They were like they never really meshed. Whereas, like when you look at this team, you've got all your superstars are all like in their first couple of years, right?
Right.
Like Sewell is your pro bowler, Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragnow, Amon Ra. Like these are all, except for Ragnow, they're all young guys, right? Hutchinson's on the rise, and all your like talent is like, they're not as established as that 14 team was. So the expectations were really high, but I still think the expectations for this team are better because I think it's sustainable, right? So, yeah, I mean, top three seasons for optimism, 2001, 2011, 2014. And
no,
then I think
no,
I think
not 2001.
Well, 2000.
This
yeah,
is like, I mean, this, right. this 2000s. I was good. They right. asked throughout your life, 1993.
Well, 97 was really, yeah. yeah.
Because, you know, 93, there was talk like they're the only team that can match up with Dallas. This is the team.
Right.
And
well,
they beat them on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
You know, like it was, there was a lot of, there was a lot of hype about that team. Well,
yeah, the 93 team was great, but in the 2000s. Yeah. Cause you had,
watch it with the great talk.
Well, they were. I mean, look, they had, you
they had
you
a great
had Herman,
offense.
You had yep. Herman, Perryman, and Johnny Morton, right? You still had Barry back there. Like you had, they were offensively very good.
Right.
They were fun to watch in 90 back then.
Yeah, 93. I don't know. Morton wasn't there yet.
Oh, he wasn't?
No, because he's like a rookie. Third? Their third receiver back then. Oh, geez, Aubrey Matthews. Let me look it up.
Oh, gosh. I thought they had Morton in that day. Man, all right.
Willie Green.
Way back.
Willie Green. <I don't know. laughs> Willie Green was their number three receiver. 28 receptions, 462 yards. That's in 93. Morton, yeah. I think, shows up in 94, 95. Yeah, because he's like a, he was pick in the 20s, right? Yeah. He was a first round pick of theirs, but it was later in the first. I don't know. We're probably right. boring everybody listening. We're, yeah, Johnny about... Morton's a rookie in 94.
Okay. So then the next year. No. Geez, it's 30 years ago. My memory
yeah,
is
oh, yeah.
a little right. off.
We're going to move on.
Okay.
Jason Krulik, which is more likely after this season? Ben Johnson leaves to become a head coach. Aaron Glenn leaves to become a head coach. Or someone like Ray Agnew or John Dorsey leaves to become a GM?
For me, I think the most likely is that Ben Johnson leaves.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I mean, he was coveted last season, and I think he will be again.
But there are a lot of dumb teams out there, and I could see John Dorsey getting another shot at being a GM. Don't lock that out. Mm-hmm. All right. Random CPA asks, what's John Dorsey up to these days?
Well, he's wearing a plain sweatshirt with the words Detroit Lions written across it, all just right. like he has at every other stop he's ever been at. And he does what he does. He comes out and watches practice. He scouting film and you know, behind the scenes. And they got a lot of guys that wear multiple hats, and he's one of them. And he, you know, he's in a cushy spot, man. So yeah. He's just doing what he's always been doing. We saw him in a rookie minicamp last weekend. He walked out wearing that same sweatshirt he always wears.
Ascension Lutheran. I recently heard the quote, talent sets the floor, character sets the ceiling. This thought explained to me all of the moves during this transition, Hockenson, Akuda, Swift. How do you think this thought, which is, I'm sure has Parcells roots, changed the team?
I mean, it's definitely something you could apply to the team because they definitely put a premium on character. I think the issues with Hockenson and like Akuda, I don't think those were necessarily character issues as much as they weren't meshing with the stylistic system that the Lions were trying to do. Plus they were on the precipice of a massive contract. Potentially, right? So Hockenson for sure. And Akuda was going to make $10 million this year, and I don't think they wanted to absorb that. With Swift, I don't want to say character, but I do think a lot of the issues that they had with him surrounded injury history and his ability to rehab from it. So I don't know if you want to qualify that as character or not. But you know, I do think the character is a premium, right? Like I don't think we can, I don't necessarily want to say like negative things about these guys. I just don't think they fit in exactly where the Lions were in the direction the Lions were headed. At the same time, character is a big thing, right? Like it's a driving point. And when you look at every player that they've drafted, it starts with character. Right. And while they are talented at their respective positions, and the reason that Holmes drafted them is because it's a combination of talent plus character that's made them somebody that he wants to invest his his job on, right? His job is dependent on these guys succeeding, and he prioritizes these two roles, or, you know, these X, Y, and Z things, and these players that he drafts, they have it.
Austin Foose, if you could add any former Lion to this current team, they had to have played a significant amount of their snaps for the Lions. Who would you add? Also, they have to be retired. Sue is not eligible.
Well, I mean, it's two guys, right?
Are you saying, like, it's Barry Sanders or Calvin Johnson?
Yeah, for me, I mean,
Barry Sanders would be number one. Well, but we have a hole to fill. We want Alex Karras back to defensive tackle. Like, I don't, how? And, or do you want Bobby Lane playing quarterback? Oh, like, if you have questions about Goff, yeah, you know, then it's like, well, look at Lane's stats. He threw interceptions all over the place. Yeah, but he won championships and had game-winning drives. Well known for it. Doak Walker, Spielman, okay. Linebacker. Well, if you're going to go linebacker, Joe Schmidt over Spielman. Schmidt's one of the greatest linebackers of all time.
Yeah.
Two-way player. So, Alex Wojciechowicz, who played both center and linebacker, like in the 30s. So, but I don't think he'd be stuck playing one way nowadays.
Did Doak play both ways too? I'm trying to remember.
I'm sure he did. He was more but he was a Jahmyr Gibbs, ran the ball, received the ball out of the backfield. You know, it's Barry Sanders. Who would? That's the poor thing for the youngsters out there. You know, who never got to see him play week in and week out. They get to watch the highlights on YouTube, which are, you know, exciting to begin with. But, you know, to see him again play would be incredible.
With this offensive line as well, like,
You would have that Dallas Cowboys offensive line.
Yeah, it would. To put it in perspective, a 2,000-yard season would be expected with Barry behind this line.
Sure.
Right? Like, I don't see.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the expectation. 2,000. Like, we got the question earlier, could they exceed, like, their last year's mark of the 2,100? Yeah, Barry could possibly do that by himself if he was behind this offensive line. Like, the combination of the two would be breathtaking.
Yeah, no, it would be great to see. Too bad we won't get a chance to see that. Maybe in our future, at some point, we'll see something akin to that.
I still think Barry could come out and still do a little bit.
He could rush for 800 yards as a 52-year-old or however old he is.
he probably could. He still looks good.
All right. We made it through all the questions. We had three really nice reviews come in.
Very
from
nice.
Crazy Captain Nemo, MJC 7006, and SWAT 2. So we appreciate those, you know. If you get out there and you feel like leaving us a rating, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, anywhere, just please do.
Yeah, those were really nice. Very nice.
And I don't know. Do you have anything to add, Eric?
No, I don't think so. It's going to be, like we said at the top, it's going to be a couple of weeks of, voluntary OTAs, and we'll get into minicamp, and hopefully there'll be a lot more information for us to work our way through.
All right. So that's it. That's all the time we got for this week. And until next time, let's go Lions.